do you know this tune? I didn't. And then they called it on the bandstand. And I was equally frightened when the bass player just said, yeah, I got it, and started to play this beautiful groove. It's called Recordame. And if you know it, I guess you know it. But if you don't, you don't. But you feel it, don't you? Because somewhere in those eight bars, that bossa nova groove catches you somewhere, just under the ribs. That's Joe Henderson's Remember Me, Recordame. And it works. You're going to remember it. I'm Joanne Allain, and this is The Standard Show, coming to you from Big E Radio in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Every episode, I take one single jazz standard from the real book, and then I pull it apart, trace it back, figure out why it stuck and who kept it alive. We're going to look at the chart, the session, the versions that changed something. And tonight, we're spending 60 minutes with one of the great standards of the modern jazz era, Recordame by Joe Henderson. This shows up in the real book, and that means it shows up at jam sessions. And that's the first thing worth knowing about it. Recordame is not an obscure deep cut. It's a canonical hard bop meets bossa nova standard that every working jazz musician is expected to know. And yet, for all its ubiquity, the story behind it is surprisingly strange. A 15-year-old kid in Ohio writes a tune. He hears bossa nova for the first time through gunfire during military training. He revises the melody on the spot. A few years later, he walks into the Van Gelder studio in Englewood Cliffs, New Jersey, with Kenny Durham, McCoy Tyner, Butch Warren, and Pete De La Rocca, and records his debut album. The instrumental has no words, it didn't need them. And then, 35 years later, a Seattle jazz vocalist named Kelly Johnson sits down and writes the words and finds something in the melody that Henderson never said out loud. Tonight, the life of Joe Henderson, one of the most important tenor saxophonists of the 20th century. This 1963 Blue Note session that produced both this tune and Blue Bossa in the same afternoon. The through composed form that breaks every rule about how a jazz standard is supposed to be shaped. The bossa nova wave that Henderson caught before most American jazzers knew what to do with it. And the real book thread we're going to pull tonight was the near total absence of women composers in the original editions of the real book and what erasure means for music that gets called standard. And a version sequence that spans from the 1963 debut to a 1985 All-Star reunion at Town Hall through a 1991 Autophile Summit and a Canadian pianist who made that tune into a love letter. So stick around, this one's about memory and the different shape memory takes depending on who is doing the remembering. Joe Henderson was born on April 24th of 1937 in Lima, Ohio, a mid-sized city roughly halfway between Dayton and Toledo. He was one of 15 children, which already tells you something about the noise levels in that house. The Henderson household absorbed music from every direction. A sister played opera records, another was devoted to Bo Diddley, country music hummed out of the radio. Joe told an interviewer that he grew up listening to Johnny Cash just as much as he listened to Charlie Parker. Not a line you'd expect from one of the architects of hard bop, but it shaped him. He absorbed everything. His older brother, James T., was particularly important. James had a serious record collection, Lester Young, Ben Webster, jazz at the Philharmonic, and by the time Joe was six, he was already learning how to hear the saxophone. He wanted to play drums first. He'd make drums out of his mother's pie pans until she told him to stop that. When he was nine, his school teachers gave him a musical aptitude test. They told him he scored high enough to play anything, and they handed him a saxophone, and the instrument stuck. He attended Kentucky State College briefly, then transferred to Wayne State University in Detroit from 1956 to 1960. Detroit's jazz scene in those years was extraordinary. Donald Byrd, Yusef Lateef, Barry Harris all passed through, and Henderson was studying and playing alongside them. Barry Harris gave him private lessons. By 1959, Henderson was leading his own band. A private recording from 1958 places him on a basement session alongside a young John Coltrane. He was barely 21. In 1960, he was drafted into the U.S. Army, where he was stationed at Fort Benning, Georgia. He led an award-winning quartet, won a military music composition, and was sent on a world tour to entertain American troops in Japan and Europe. It was there, during military training, by his own account, that he first heard the bossa nova. He describes it precisely. The music came through while he was on a firing range over gunfire. The lilting pulse of the new Brazilian music reached him across the noise, and he immediately thought of a tune he'd written years earlier as a 15-year-old in Lima. He said he didn't rewrite the melody. He changed the rhythm of the melody line, fitted it to a bossa nova pulse. Antonio Carlos Jobim, he said, had a profound effect on how he handled melodies he already had. The tune he eventually called Recordame was born not once, but twice. Henderson was discharged in 1962 and moved to New York City. The way the story gets told, his very first night on the scene was clarifying. Trumpeter Kenny Dorham introduced himself at a party at Junior Cook's apartment, and the two of them went down to the Village Vanguard to hear Dexter Gordon play. Gordon invited the young Henderson up to sit in. He played 15 choruses. His career was, from that moment, established. Dorham became a mentor and champion. He brought Henderson onto his Blue Note recording, Una Mas, in April of 1963. 2 months later, Blue Note offered Henderson his own album. He was 26, and he'd been in New York for less than a year. As a composer, Henderson had a specific sensibility that set him apart from the bebop mainstream. He worked in modal sections and 2-5 progressions simultaneously, not choosing between the old harmonic language and the new, but instead layering them. His tunes had grooves, Latin feels, Afro-Cuban inflections, and the bossa nova pulse he'd absorbed and made his own. He wrote melodies that were, as saxophone David Liebman put it, impossible not to remember after you'd heard them, even when you hadn't consciously noticed how sophisticated the harmony was. Recordame is the oldest of his compositions. He wrote the first version before he'd heard Jobim, before bossa nova existed in its modern form, before he'd finished high school. And yet the chord structure he arrived at, an A minor section, alternating with a C minor section, moving through 2-5 progressions to a series of descending major 7 chords, is the work of someone with a precocious ear for harmonic motion. He was 15 years old, and the sophistication was already there. His compositional output over his Blue Note years was remarkable. Inner Urge from the 1964 album of the same name is now one of the great test pieces for jazz improvisers. Isotope takes the blues and wrenches it sideways. A Shade of Jade, Serenity, Black Narcissus, The Kicker, the catalog he built between 63 and 66 is the foundation of what we now call the post-bop repertoire. Recordame in its original form is an instrumental, but the title is already a lyric. Two words in Portuguese that mean, remember me. And it turns out that the two words were enough to wait quietly for 35 years until a singer decided to fill in the rest. Kelly Johnson is a Seattle-based jazz vocalist who studied with pianist Fred Hirsch and crucially with the legendary jazz singer Mark Murphy, who she considers her primary mentor. In 1998, she released her debut album called Make Someone Happy on the LA-based Chartmaker Records with Hirsch producing. On that album, Johnson wrote English lyrics to Recordame and titled it Remember Me. That recording is the first and for years remained the most significant lyric treatment of Henderson's melody. Johnson went on to win first place in the International Jazz Connect Vocal Competition, was selected by Wynton Marsalis in the Lincoln Center as a U.S. State Department Musical Ambassador Abroad in 2007, and taught at the Cornish College of the Arts in Seattle for years. She recorded Live at Birdland in 2004, a set that the Jazz Education Journal named a blue chip jazz vocal album. Her work with Henderson's Melody was not a one-off. It's part of a broader practice of engaging seriously with the existing jazz repertoire and finding out what lives inside it. Johnson heard in Recorded Me was at its core a love song asking not to be forgotten, and that's what the title implies. But Henderson never made it explicit. There are no words, no story, no named relationship, no particular loss. Johnson's lyrics apply all of that. They make an abstract into a specific, the modal into something emotional. In doing so, they eliminate something that's always been present in the melody, but easy to miss in an instrumental context. The tune has an ache to it. The Portuguese title and its refusal to be translated into English is its own kind of statement. Henderson didn't call it Remember Me, even after Bossa Nova made Brazil culturally legible to American audiences. He kept it in Portuguese. The verb recordar comes from the Latin recordare, to bring back to the heart. To remember in this etymology is not merely to retrieve something from memory, it's to return it to the place where it lives, at the chest, at the body, the thing that you feel before you think. There's an interior space Henderson's melody occupies, and Johnson's lyric named that place. One more thing we're saying about the title. It's puts Recordame in a specific tradition of jazz standards with non-English titles that signal a deliberate cosmopolitanism. Blue Bossa on the same album, Nika's Dream from Horace Silver, Hobium's entire catalog, these titles carry geography. They announce that jazz is not just an American music anymore, or rather that American jazz has always been in conversation with the whole world. And Recordame arrived before most of that conversation went mainstream. Henderson was hearing Hobim over Static and Gunfire, and he went back to a melody that he'd been carrying since high school and said, "This is what I was trying to say." Recording of Recordame is on June 3rd, 1963 at the Van Gelder Studio in New Jersey. The session was Henderson's debut album, Page One, it's called, and it's on Blue Note Records. Alfred Lion produced, Rudy Van Gelder engineered. That's Kenny Durham on the trumpet, Joe Henderson on the tenor saxophone, McCoy Tyner on piano, Butch Warren on the bass, and Pete LaRocca on drums. One detail worth knowing, McCoy Tyner is listed on the album's front cover as etc., a thinly disguised credit made necessary because Tyner had recently signed to Impulse Records and his contract restricted front cover credits for competing labels. His name appears correctly on the back and on the inner label. For a lot of listeners, figuring out that etc. meant McCoy Tyner was one of the small pleasures of getting to know the record. And Durham is the older statement of the group, nearly 40 at the time of the session. He played with Charlie Parker's quintet, replaced Clifford Brown in the Max Roach group, recorded dozens of albums as both leader and sideman. He wrote the liner notes for Page One himself, and they're worth noting. He called Henderson the goateed astronaut of the tenor sax and described him as one of the most musical young saxophonists to show since Charlie Parker. That's a bold claim to put in writing on a debut album, but Doran believed it. And in the same liner notes, he gave a brief description of the tune. Recordame, which in Portuguese means remember me, is a 16 plus 16 composition that was written in 1955, right after he came out of school. Durham's dating of the composition to 55 is the only first person timestamp we have. Van Gelder's studio was the engine room of Blue Note's golden era. Located in a converted house in the Englewood Cliffs, it was the site of hundreds of landmark sessions. Van Gelder had an extraordinary ear for acoustic placement and for recording philosophy that favored presence over polish. The Blue Note sound, the warmth, the sense of musicians in the room all breathing together was largely his achievement. The session on June 3rd was efficient, 6 tracks, 1 day, which was standard Blue Note practice. Lion ran tight, purposeful sessions. Musicians came prepared. On the original vinyl, Recordame is the first track on side B. You flip the record and it's the first thing you hear. The chart includes a 10-bar intro, a modal vamp that establishes the A minor tonality before the melody begins. The intro isn't written in most fake book versions of the tune, including the real book, but jam session culture has canonized it. You're expected to know that the intro exists and when to play it. A musician who launches straight into the head without a vamp immediately signals that they learned the tune from a chart rather than the recording. The intro is an unwritten knowledge passed from ear to ear. The publishing rights to Recordame are held through EMI, an art catalog in the United States, and Blue Horizon Music in the UK, and with Jazz Rack Listening for Japan and Saxon for Mexico. The reception for Page One was immediate and enthusiastic within the jazz world. Over the next 3 years, Henderson appeared in more than 30 Blue Note albums as a sideman, in addition to his own records. Recordame made the rounds really quickly, recognized as a standard worth knowing within a few years of its first recording. The recording of Recordome that most people encounter first is this recording, the one on page one, which means the recording that defined the tune is also the first recording of the tune. That's relatively unusual for a jazz standard. Often a second or third artist picks up the song and delivers the definitive version. With Recordome, Henderson got it right on the debut. What makes page one's version so compelling? Well, a few things. The bossa nova groove is unhurried. Pete LaRocca plays with the lightness of touch the Brazilian pulse requires, never overplayed, letting the clave feeling just breathe. Butch Warren's bass is economical and grounded. McCoy Tyner's voicings, his characteristic stacked fourths, those dense, resonant clusters, give the harmonic material a weight that offsets the delicacy of the rhythm. And then there's Henderson himself. His solo on the original recording is a study in motive development. He takes Small's ideas and he turns them over, examines them from different angles, repeats them with rhythmic displacement. There are moments where he plays three-note groupings against a 4-4 pulse, creating a push-pull sensation that feels unstable in the best possible way. He uses Dorian mode for the minor sections and targets the dominant chords with bebop vocabulary, but he never sounds just academic. He sounds like someone who's lived inside the tune for years, which, given that he'd written it at 15, he had. Kenny Durham's trumpet presence on the record is just as important. His tone, warm, slightly dark, not trumpet bright, complements Henderson's tenor rather than competing with it. The front line on page one was not a contest. It's a conversation. Doran was a mentor and he played like one. It's generous, specifically always in service of the music. The arrangement is spare in the way that only confident musicians can really manage. There are ensemble hits during the head, moments when the band lands together on specific rhythmic accents. These hits are another piece of unwritten knowledge attached to the tune. They're on the recording, they're not on the chart, and you're expected to know them. Play Recordome with a band that knows all the hits and the tune has a different physical presence than it does when everyone's just reading the book and guessing. You're listening to The Standard Show on Big E Radio, coming to you from Edmonton, Alberta. I'm Johanna Lean, and tonight we're deep into Recordome by Joe Henderson. You can find us at the-standard-show.com. If you're enjoying the show, tell someone who might like it. Now back to the music. The Page One album sold steadily rather than explosively. Henderson, the sideman, was in some ways more commercially successful in the immediate term. He appeared on Horace's Silver Song for My Father in 64, which is a jukebox hit. He was on Lee Morgan's The Sidewinder Sessions. But Recordome is a composition that continued to circulate and grow. By the late 1960s, it was in fake books. By the mid-70s, it was in the real book. By the 80s, it was being called at jam sessions as a matter of course. Henderson himself revisited it repeatedly at the Lighthouse in the early 1970s, at the 1985 One Note with Blue Note concert on his Verve-era big band recording, in live sessions throughout his career. Then in his final years at Verve, the triple Grammy years, the Renaissance, he recorded Lush Life, the music of Billy Strayhorn in 1992, So Near, So Far, Mingus for Miles in 1993, Double Rainbow, the music of Antonio Carlos Jobim in 1994. The Jobim tribute is worth noting. The man whose music Henderson heard over gunfire during Army training, the composer who changed the rhythm of his first tune, got his own full album from Henderson 30 years later, and the circle is closed. We've been living with this version all afternoon, but it's worth saying clearly, the original recording is the standard. Who's on it? Kenny Durham on trumpet, Joe Henderson tenor sax, McCoy Tyner piano, Butch Warren on bass, Pete LaRocca on drums, recorded June 3rd, 1963, the intro vamp, the ensemble hits, the bossa nova pulse at the tempo that breathes. That's the reference. Everything that comes after this is just a conversation with this. We'll be right back. Yeah, that wall of drums, of course, is Tony Williams. This recording is from February 22nd, 1985, Town Hall, New York City. Blue Note Records had been dormant for years. Founder Alfred Lion retired in 67, the label changed hands, and then went quiet. In 1985, executive Bruce Lundvall relaunched it under EMI to celebrate. He assembled a concert that reads like a fantasy roster. It's Art Blakey, Freddie Hubbard, Herbie Hancock, Coy Tyner, Cecil Taylor, Jimmy Smith, Tony Williams, Ron Carter, Woody Shaw, Bobby Hutcherson, Jackie McLean, Charles Lloyd, Michael Petrucciani, and Joe Henderson. Henderson played Record and Made that night with Hubbard on trumpet, Hancock on the piano, Carter on bass, Williams on drums, and Bobby Hutcherson added on the vibraphone. The vibraphone is interesting. It changes the texture significantly. Hutcherson's sustained resonant lines beneath Henderson's sax gives the bossa nova feel a shimmer it doesn't have in the original quintet. Williams propels the tune with barely restrained polyrhythmic intelligence. The version has more forward momentum than the 63 recording. Henderson sounds totally at home. 22 years after the debut, still claiming this tune. We'll be right back. So smooth. McCoy Tyner, who played on the original 63-page one session as the piano player, is listed only as etc., which brings Henderson back to Recordeme for an Autophile label in 1991. That's Chesky Records, recording at RCA Studio A in New York City on April 3rd and 4th. That's Ron Carter, woo, on the bass, Al Foster on the drums, and the high fidelity is extraordinary. This is Tyner's session, not Henderson's, and it's fascinating to hear the tune from the piano's point of view. Tyner is a far more assertive presence here than he was in 63, when he was just 24 and couldn't even get his name on the cover. His comping beneath Henderson's solo is more dense, more harmonically interventionist. The post-Coltrane vocabulary, fully integrated. Henderson responds by playing more spaciously than he might otherwise, and it leaves room for Tyner's left hand. Their interplay is the recording's greatest achievement. Two musicians returning to the same tune after 28 years and finding it had grown large enough to contain everything they'd become. Thank you. That lady on the keyboard is Renee Rosnes, born in Regina, Saskatchewan. She grew up in North Vancouver and studied at the U of T, then moved to New York City on a Canada Council grant in 1985. In 1987, she joined Henderson's Quartet, not as a fill-in, but as a working band member who traveled and recorded with him for years. She knew his music from the inside. Her 2008 tribute album, Black Narcissus, released on Pony Canyon in Japan, features Rosnes in a piano trio with bassist Peter Washington and drummer Louis Nash. Her version of Recordame is taken faster than the original. It's pushed towards medium upswing, which really changes the feel. The bossa nova quality doesn't disappear, but it becomes more propulsive, like a twitch or a tick, more asymmetric. Her right hand plays the rhythmic displacement that Henderson pioneered in his solo lines. She's absorbed this tune into her improvisational language so completely you can hear it in the phrasing. The Canadian Encyclopedia has described her as amongst the most gifted jazz pianists of her generation, and this recording is evidence. This is a Canadian recording by Brownman Alley's Electric Trio. They took Recordame through an effects chain on their 2013 album Gravitron and won a National Jazz Award for this record. The version keeps the modal vamp of the intro, but subjects it to a processed layered trumpet texture that turns the bossa nova into something closer to an ambient groove. The changes are intact, the spirit of the melody is there, but the sonic world has shifted entirely. Henderson, who was never allergic to electricity, would probably have been curious. Now a little bit about real books. Let's talk about those real books. When Terry Lynn Carrington founded the Berklee Institute of Jazz and Gender Justice in 2018, she started the institution with a question, which was, what would jazz sound like in a culture without patriarchy? At the launch celebration, she asked two students to play some live music. They looked to the real book for repertoire, and Carrington scanned those pages and found almost nothing. The book that defined what counted as a jazz standard, assembled by two anonymous Berklee students in the 70s, deciding which tunes went in and which didn't, encoded the aesthetic preference of a particular moment, a particular gender, and a particular scene. Women composers are not absent from jazz. Mary Lou Williams was composing before most of the men in the real book were born. Alice Coltrane, Carla Bley, Toshiko Akiyoshi, Jerry Allen. The tradition of women composing jazz is deep and continuous, but they're not in the real book in any significant number. In 22, Carrington published New Standards, 101 Lead Sheets by Women Composers, with Berklee Press and Hal Leonard. It's a direct response to The Gap, 101 compositions spanning a century, from Lil Hardin Armstrong, Louis Armstrong's sister, in 1922, to pieces written in 2021 by Carrington's students. A statement that the canon was never fixed, only frozen, but it is possible to unfreeze it. I'm going to leave you tonight with a big band recording of Ricardo May. I'm starting to really enjoy big band. It is such a breakdown and hyper-focus on all the elements that go into a tune with all of the voicings and all of the sections and that rhythm section pounding. I'm starting to really enjoy it, especially as a way of hearing a tune more deeply. You're hearing Tony Cadillac's big band. It's Ricardo May from 2023. Cadillac's choice to include two Henderson tunes on this recording, both Ricardo May and Caribbean Fire Dance, one in the same big band, is a real statement of the influence. And the fact that a sideman of his caliber, he's a New York A-lister, he's played with Buddy Rich and the Maria Schneider Orchestra on Broadway, and in major pop recording sessions, and he's chosen Henderson's 63 debut composition as the second track for his most personal record. That's really worth noting. Piece of music last is not that it gets written into a book. It's that generation after generation of musicians choose to keep playing it and keep testing themselves against it. And they keep finding something new in it. Mekhi Tyner, who played on the first recording, came back to it in 91 and opened an album with it. René Rosnes, who played alongside Henderson for years, built a tribute record around his compositions. The Broman Electric Trio ran it through the effects rack in 2013 and won an award for that. Kelly Johnson heard an instrumental melody and recognized it as a love song. And now you've got a big band taking it apart and putting it all back together. And here's what I leave you with. Start with the page one recording. Don't skip the track. Start from the top. Listen to Blue Bossa. Let the whole session build. When Recordeme comes in as the first track on side B, pay attention to the intro vamp before the melody. Listen to what De La Roca does with the brushes. Listen to Tyner's voicings. And then listen to Henderson navigate the B section. The way he moves through those descending major sevenths as if they're not even a thing. Then find Kelly Johnson's Remember Me. Listen to the words. Then come back to this big band piece, because now you really know it. And you're going to hear all the parts of it expand and come back to you. Joe Henderson asked you to remember him. I'm Joanna Lean. This has been The Standard Show on Biggie Radio from Edmonton, Alberta. You'll find me at the-standard-show.com, and I'll talk to you next week.